The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Mom with a small head, I hope you had a nice holiday.
There she is. Our good friend Eleanor.
That's great.
There, he's got the small head. We have revised the video to give him the small head. Graham, at my request, and apparently it took 40 takes because it's not easy to work with a 5-year-old. But they finally, Eleanor nailed it. And there. You're welcomed back officially by Eleanor.
It's man official.
With a small head.
Wow.
She hopes you had a nice holiday.
Oh, I did, Eleanor. Thank you so much. What a cute little girl. That was like really one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me on this show right there. That's like a privilege, really. Great age, too. Man, I miss my kids being that age. But appreciate the love for, you know, even though I got a small head. Thank you so much, Eleanor.
And for those of you who wonder what in the hell we're talking about, and
yeah,
that would be a reasonable position at this point. We had an email last week from Eleanor's father, Graham. They are fans of the show in England. And Eleanor sees Chris and calls him the man with the small head because she is under the grossly mistaken impression based upon the realities of TV that he has a small head. He doesn't. But she's concerned about his small head and she wants to know why he has a small head and if there's a link between his small head and his need to take so many days off.
Right.
Is it a direct result?
It's a direct result.
A small head.
Yes.
So
I'm stressed out. My small brain can't take it. Yes, definitely.
So thank you, Graham. Hello, Eleanor. That was great. It
awesome.
Was awesome. I cracked up when it came. It was just perfect. It's just perfect. Well done. And off we go. Chris watched the film using all of the powers of his small head
yes.
to analyze what happened between the Cardinals and the Rams. And I still don't get this. Rams beat the Cardinals 8 straight times with Jared Goff primarily as their quarterback. In comes Matthew Stafford. And, of course, the Cardinals dismantle the team that had been number one last week in the all-important PFT power rank.
Yeah, well, again, hey, Arizona's talented like we've talked about every week. There's just playmakers on both sides of the ball that can change the football game. You know, so there is that aspect. Kyler Murray certainly had his best performance I've ever seen him have against the Los Angeles Rams. Rams, like, weren't there at their best containing him within the pocket. I think that's one thing that jumped out. You know, he did get outside the pocket, especially early on in the game when it was still in the balance. And he made plays there that we had not seen the Rams kind of let him do to this point. So that was huge. Third downs, Mike, you know I've been talking about this all year with Kyler Murray. They stayed in third and manageable all game long. Here, a 3rd and 6, just a subtle move to the right. And again, they're one of those teams like we talk about in football where there's just too many damn good players to think you're going to match up against everybody, you know, one-on-one across the board. And I thought he, as in Kyler Murray, I thought threw the ball as well as I've ever seen him throw it. He was on his game, not only with decision-making, but, Mike, like, one of my words of the weekend was patience, and especially with the Cardinals. Like, here's the difference, I think, between their team and years past. at least on the offensive side of the ball. Their offensive line's real this year. They can protect for real, and they can run the ball with power. You know, they can literally move people out of the way. So they have a great balance there, and let alone, even though they got some power up front, it's an athletic group. So now when they want to throw screens out to the edge to the wide receivers or the running backs, they can get out there and block in space. And I think that's, to me, going to be one of the keys to the year for the Cardinals as they go forward. Not necessarily how many yards they run, but rushing attempts. That is going to be huge, because you really get compromised if you have to start worrying about their run game. Think about it this way. You know, they're going to spread you out. You want to get out there to cover these receivers and okay, let's stop that. But all of a sudden, you got to worry about a run game, and now you got to start putting people in the box. That favors matchups on the outside in the pass game. It favors the matchups in the screen game out there. You know, it can make it harder as far as just containing Kyler Murray in a lot of aspects that way as well. So that's where they were special. And once they got a lead, they were really patient and running the ball, short passes. Look at some of their drives, Mike. I don't know if you've seen it really, but 11 plays, 75 yards. You know, 17 plays, 70 yards. 10 plays, 38 yards. 9 plays, 64 yards. 12 plays, 94 yards. That shows execution and the ability to kind of just be like, hey, we're not going to hold the ball. We're not going to let Aaron Donald strip sack fumble or throw the ball down into a crowd and Jalen Ramsey's going to intercept it. And I think that's what jumped out to me more than anything about the Cardinals, especially on the offensive side of the ball, Mike.
Well, and I'm counting up 40 rushing attempts here and only 6 from Kyler Murray.
There you go. See?
Chase Edmonds had 12 and James Conner had 18. He only gained 50 yards, but he had a couple of touchdowns. So it is that patience that you're talking about, not just from Kyler Murray's standpoint, but from the offensive standpoint.
Right.
It can't be every play, let Kyler Murray go do something magical. It can't be. It's going to catch up to you at some point if you try to do it that way.
Yeah, no, exactly right. You got to give defenses more to think about. And I think that's the little difference of the Arizona team this year. It's not like the most complicated formula in the world, but because they got talent, and if you stay a little patient with the run game, and Chase Edmonds to me is like a budding superstar at the running back position. You know, if they can do that, yeah, then you got to think twice, like, damn, okay, we got to stop the run, but are we really going to leave Hopkins and Kirk and Ronald Moore and AJ Green one-on-one? You know, and then there's a splash of two tight end sets because of their ability to run the ball. They'll bring them in, and now you go, well, we got to defend the run. We do. And that allows them to run a play action pass and gash you for a big gain that way. So, you know, that was really impressive for them on that side of the ball. I just think the patience, the execution, they never let the Rams make the game frenzied. And on the other side of the ball, the Cardinals D, you know, made some plays and took the Rams out of their attack altogether, you know, as the game went along.
Well, what did you see there? Because I remember looking up and seeing DeSean Jackson get behind the defense again.
Yes.
And this time it got picked off by Byron Murphy.
That's where it starts, right there. 3-0, got the ball here right around midfield. You know, this is we've seen Stafford. Yeah, he hit a long touchdown last week, but he's missed DeSean Jackson more than he hit him. That's grossly underthrown. That's 15 yards underthrown. He had the guy beat by – this doesn't even do it justice. He had him beat by 3 or 4 strides. He's been slowing down for the last 6 or 7 steps there by the time Byron Murphy got that interception. But I think between that, you know, they have the fumble by Sony Michel that, of course, leads to a short field touchdown by the Arizona football team. The Rams' offense was just a little off, and then they got a little impatient with throwing the ball when they got down. They kind of lost their run game, but, like, Mike, they had, you know, Stafford missed a third down throw to Cooper Kupp where it's going to be a touchdown. He kind of stumbles coming out of the break and I think ended up taking a different angle, and then they missed the field goal. And Stafford was off his game just a little bit, just enough in a game like this where he could not be. And as we've talked about, like the Cardinals on the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball has got a lot of difference makers. And once they get you into – oh, you have to pass the ball. This is where I love Arizona. Vance Joseph on the defense, they do some crazy, awesome, creative stuff. And they can be very tough to move the ball once they got you in that corner of going, you got to throw the ball 3 out of 4 times here. And that's where they become like a real pain in the butt to deal with on that side.
Back to Stafford and Jackson.
Yeah.
Because I wonder if it's just as simple as Stafford has never had a guy that fast.
Sure.
And he's still adjusting to the fact that however much you would put on that pass for anyone else, you still have to put more on it for Deshaun Jackson.
You have to throw it as high and as far as you can for a guy like Deshaun Jackson. You know, Gruden used to give me a lot of credit and be like, man, you know, you're just unbelievable deep ball thrower to Joey Galloway, right? I mean, I wasn't good at much, but I could launch the ball. And, I mean, my goal with Joey was drop back fast and throw that damn thing as far as I could because he'll go run it down when it's in the air. And you really have to have that type of confidence. If I just throw it out there and high, he'll go see it and he'll just put on go-go gadget afterburners and he'll fly and go get the ball. And that is, it's rare. There's not a whole lot of guys like that in football. We saw Jameis Winston have issues hitting Deshaun Jackson a few years ago. Remember that? Same type of thing, especially Deshaun Jackson. He's deceptive speed. It doesn't look like he's flying. He's kind of a long strider. Hey, Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr., it's the same thing. He can't hit the damn guy. Odell's left, like, there's 300 yards of receiving left on the field the last 2 weeks, but Baker can't hit him. I don't know what it is. And sometimes those fast guys, it can have that effect on a quarterback, and it can take a little while to get used to how you throw the football to them.
I really do think there is a fundamental difference, though, between target practice and just launching.
100%.
With a guy like that, you just launch it. Like Russell Wilson explained it to me after week one when they beat the Colts, that he loves throwing the deep ball. He loves how everything gets quiet and it's silent, and he trusts that Tyler Lockett is going to play center fielder.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. The best receivers, the fast receivers, what allows them to be effective isn't just the speed that gets them open. They can track the ball as soon as it's in the air. And it's like playing outfield. As soon as the ball's off the bat, you have an innate sense of where it's going to be and where you need to be. As soon as the ball is thrown, the receiver has that inherent barometer that tells him,
right,
here's where it's going, here's where I need to be to go get it. Wherever it is, wherever it fires, he knows that's where he's got to go get it. So it's not like the timing route and put the ball right 100%. There and the receiver's going to hit it right in his hand. No, this is, it's different. It's a launch. And
there is a difference.
Some
you're
of these,
right.
Some of these guys need to think of it that way. You're not trying to hit a target.
No.
You're just trying to put it out there.
No, you're trying to put it in a broad area. And I think you explained it exactly right. Yeah, this is different than an out route or a 20-yard comeback or a 20-yard in cut. Where, you are getting used to the timing and the rhythm of a guy coming out of a break and his body language. This is like, hey, just let me know the angle you're on, and I'm going to throw it generally out here in this area. You're a receiver. And the thing is, where we talk about, like, and I know we had this conversation a little last year, great deep ball throwers throw the ball high in the air because it gives you more room for error. And, of course, like you're talking about, it gives the receiver the ability to adjust the ball. And DBs, wait for it, why they don't play receiver is because they're not good at adjusting to the ball more times than not. They usually, when they start to look up, they choke to death. Oh, my gosh. And they just grab a defender or do whatever, or a receiver or whatever. And hopefully Stafford will get that. He does have some Calvin Johnson history, right, to where I think it's got to be approached like that. Yeah, he's not big like Calvin, but just – throw it 65 yards, throw it as high as you can, and Deshaun Jackson will go get it.
The other question, too, whether or not Stafford is relying too excessively on Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
There's a question of whether Robert Woods is getting frustrated. Sean McVay addressed that yesterday. He said he's going to work to get him the ball more. There was a late touchdown scored by Robert Woods and kind of threw the ball away, and McVay explained that was more about frustration about the circumstance of the game. But Woods is getting about half the targets right now of Kupp. And for a guy who's got a bloated cap number and a big salary and I think is in jeopardy next year as the Rams deal with a cap crunch, he's got to be thinking, hey, if I'm not getting opportunities to show what I can do, I may be on the endangered species list.
Yeah, well, maybe. I do think like your point's real in that it's a little too much. Every big situation is, it seems like it's draw the play up for Cooper Kupp right now to where you can kind of pin that tail on the donkey as far as the Rams offense. A little bit like we saw earlier in the show when we showed Hunter Renfrow with the Chargers. I mean, it's third and Renfrow. Do you think the Chargers don't know it? Well, it's the same thing with the Rams a little bit right now. You know, anytime it's like third and five or six, it's, hey, let's get Cooper Kupp on a stack release and he'll read the coverage and go in or out or straight, whatever we kind of tell him to do or dictate on the week. And yeah, defenses, I sure are starting to see that. And then the Cardinals definitely did, you know, some brackets and were aware of where he was in those situations. No doubt about it.
Let's take a quick break. When we return, I wish the Broncos and the Ravens were in the same division, so they would definitely be playing again this year. There's a new coaching rivalry between Vic Fangio and John Harbaugh. We'll get you up to speed on it right after this.
And he said,
the last play from scrimmage in the Broncos-Ravens game on Sunday. The Ravens had a streak of 42 straight games with 100 or more rushing yards. They wanted to get to 43 because it matched the Steelers' all-time streak from 74 to 77. And Vic Fangio, not happy. A lot of bleeping if we had the audio. A lot of bleeping. So here's the coaches talking about the situation yesterday.
You know, that's one of those things that's meaningful, you know, and it's one of those things that's, I think as a head coach, you got to be mindful of your team and your players and your coaches and what it means to them. It's a very, very tough record to accomplish, and it's a long-term record. So I'm not going to say it's more important than winning the game for sure, and it's certainly not. But as a head coach, I think you do that for your players and you do that for your coaches, and it's something that they'll have for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of bullshit, but I expected it from them. You know, I've 37 years in pro ball, I've never seen anything like that. So, but it was to be expected, and we expected it.
Why did you expect it from them?
Because I just know how they operate. You know, that's just their, mode of operation there. Player safety is secondary.
I mean, I thought we were on good terms. We had a nice chat before the game. Known each other for a long time, but I promise you, I'm not going to give that insult one second thought. That's what's meaningful to us might not be meaningful to them. Their concerns are definitely not our concerns. And, we didn't expect to get the ball back, you know, but I had already decided, we decided that if we got the ball back, we were going to try to get the yards. And we got it back with 3 seconds left. So you're throwing the ball in the end zone with 10 seconds left. I don't know that there's a 16-point touchdown that's going to be possible right there. So, you know, that didn't have anything to do with winning the game. So, like I said, what's meaningful to us might not be meaningful to them, and we're not going to concern ourselves with that.
Look, I think this falls in the realm of where reasonable minds may differ. I think the consecutive number of games with 100 or more rushing yards, a record I wasn't even aware of. I didn't even know they kept track of it until this all happened. Who cares? This is not DiMaggio's hitting streak. This is not something you're getting a trophy for. You can put the trophy right next to your consecutive preseason winning streak. It's meaningless to me. And if there was a way to reliably poll Ravens fans and truthfully poll Ravens players and staff, I think most people would not care about this record. And I think the fact that Pittsburgh held it is one of the reasons why Harbaugh cares about it as much as he does.
Yeah, maybe. I don't disagree. But I would agree with you. Like, I bet you the players don't really care or the fans. It is totally a coach's thing to put on your resume, kind of speaks like a banner statement about your football team, right? Like, look, we're bigger and tougher. We run for 100 yards every week. That's what we do. It's almost 3 years in a row. We run for 100 yards every week. So, again, I will like semi-agree with John Harbaugh in the fact that, yeah, what's meaningful to them is not meaningful to the other team. And it's not his job. It's not his job to coach the Broncos or worry about their football team or their feelings either. He felt like this was something that was important to him or Greg Roman or whatever. And, you know, that this is the way the Ravens are. They're the bad bullies of the NFL. They don't give a damn. They don't care. So it's risky. Yeah, a player gets hurt, your ass
definitely
is going to take a lot
Lamar,
of crap.
Lamar Jackson
right.
tears an ACL on that play. They're definitely going to care.
Exactly. Somebody else gets hurt, you're going to hear a lot about it. But, you know, I also think we've seen, you know, other things like this throughout history of football where, oh, this receiver has a consecutive, you know, reception streak and a team throws him the ball with 45 seconds left even though the game's over just to keep the streak alive. This is not that unusual. Again, I understand Fangio being pissed off, but I can see John Harbaugh's side here too. It doesn't like necessarily really, really bother me.
But to boil it down to 3 seconds left, you're up 16.
You just got an interception in the end zone.
Yeah.
And you don't take a knee. The Elias Sports Bureau tried to find any situation where with five or fewer seconds, a team with a 10-point or more lead didn't just, you know, take a knee.
Right.
I agree with the statement, what's meaningful to us isn't meaningful to them. The question is, how meaningful is it to anyone other than John Harbaugh? How meaningful is it really to anyone? And I said this yesterday. What caused him to do it is part of what makes him great, because he's so ultra competitive.
Exactly.
He cares about stuff that other people don't care about. And because you're wired that way, it positions you to succeed in the things that do matter.
Yeah, right. I agree there. Vic Fangio worked with his brother. He knows how the Harbaughs operate. You know, they take no prisoners. They don't care. You know, Jim's a jerk. John's a pretty good guy. So, you know, but still, when it comes to football and competing, hey, that he doesn't care. There's, you know, no prisoners attitude. That's the way they are. I do respect that about them. I do. Yeah, it's tremendous risk, certainly. And it is a little bit, I know, amateurish to a degree. But I don't think the Ravens care. And I do hope somebody asks the players a little bit about it. You know, when
Lamar Jackson already said he doesn't care.
He already said he doesn't care. I didn't even know that. Care. So that takes away a little bit of the power Harbaugh has in this situation, the fact that, you know, players saying they don't care.
Yeah, I get it. I understand it, but I don't agree with it. And it's a record to me that is as meaningless as any record can be, short of the all-time winning streak in preseason games. By definition, those games are meaningless. So any record in the preseason is also meaningless. But there's only one thing that matters is winning the Super Bowl. And if there's some broader strategy that this galvanizes your time, I think
it's just all of it. It's all of it. Like you said, Mike, it's the preseason. It's, oh, I'll ask my players to go for it on 4th-and-2. I'll do this. It's just, hey, we don't back down to anybody. It's kind of the mantra of the Ravens. That's what they are. They don't care. They're going to be the big bad bullies in the NFL, and they kind of enjoy it.
Except in week 17 of the 2019 season, when they rested their starters, giving them 3 weeks between meaningful games and causing them to be flat in the playoffs against the Titans. They still got their 100 yards that day, though.
Yes, they did. Gus Edwards had a big day. Yeah, I know. Listen, I hear you. I know what you're saying. There's some weird logic there, but obviously they felt important, or it was somewhat important.
Let's take a break. Goats in a bad way coming out of week 4 when PFT Live continues right after.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Here's Dawson Knox with the flop that would make any European soccer player proud. Although it was a little bit of a shove there.
It was enough.
He acknowledges it was a little bit of a flop, but it was enough. It wasn't just like the brush and the guy falls down, but Dawson Knox, well done. All right, Goats in a bad way coming out of week 4. Chris, you're up.
I'm going to go with the Saints defense right off the bat. I mean, come on. Saints defense supposed to be like the heart and soul of that football team. They had a 21-10 in the fourth quarter. The Giants offense has been inconsistent, you know. Hasn't been able to pass protect all that well, right? Has all those like narratives around it. Well, they pass protected really well, and Danny Dimes just diced them up, you know, all the way through the fourth quarter with big plays into the overtime. I think it's got to be the shocker, you know, of the weekend to me, as far as I thought the Giants could keep it close, but I didn't think that they would win a game, especially in that fashion, down 21-10 on the road in the Superdome. that I think the Saints D, I got to give them all, you know, the GOAT award for this one, which I still have a problem with our draft name, the GOAT in a bad way. Like, what? We got to think of a new one.
Well, because GOAT used to be inherently bad, but then at some point GOAT became good because everybody called it GOAT greatest of all time. So you're overruled. You're overruled. Urban Meyer, for all reasons discussed earlier in the program, plus not kicking the field goal at the end of the first half and going up three scores. Ooh. Always go up three scores. Three scores could have been 17-0. A much different vibe in the second half for the Bengals if they're down 17 instead of 14. That's my GOAT number one.
Yeah.
Down two.
That's a good one. That really is. I mean, yeah, it's a tough one. You're at the 1 yard line like that. But yeah, I'm still old school in the fact that I favor traditional tactics in a lot of ways, as far as that's concerned. Like you said, go up three scores. Make that team go down the field and two touchdowns and a field goal to beat you. It adds
it's psychologically a psychological
difference. Exactly right. There's a psychological difference to the offense when they go, we got to do it three times as compared to just two. There is something to that. We saw it a little last night with the Raiders. Hey, they've done two scores the whole year. Three scores, different ball game. All right. I think, you know, I'm going to go, there's not a lot of like goats that jump out to me this week in a bad way. Okay. So I'm going to go with Baker Mayfield here, all right? Baker Mayfield, for 2 weeks in a row, has not played good football. You know, just as I was starting to go, damn, he's the man, and I don't know how anybody could question him, the game against the Bears wasn't good last week. It wasn't. I mean, he missed throws, reads, everything. It was all over the place. And, again, I haven't watched the film of the Minnesota game, but it looked all over the place to me as well. I know I saw a number of missed throws, a number of wobbly balls, dicey decisions, 15 for 33. You know, and I'm not a stat guy. I don't care about all that. It's the way it looked. And I think that's concerning. Mike, he's gotten into, I got to throw it as hard as I can. Let my arm whip and my head fly around every throw. And I just want to go, why? Why? You got so much arm. What are you worried about? The first 2 weeks of the year, you were throwing dimes everywhere. And now it's like, I got to throw it 108 miles per hour. 104 is not good. And it's cost him. And he has not played well the last 2 weeks.
Next one for me, and Chris, you weren't here yesterday when we talked about the Patriots-Bucks game. Bill Belichick, I still, and the more I think about it, and I've slept on it twice now, you don't kick that 56-yard field goal at the end of the game. Even if it's good, you've given Tom Brady enough time to do what Aaron Rodgers did to the 49ers a week earlier. They were going to lose that game one way or the other when they lined up to kick that field goal. They're either going to make it and Brady's going to go down and the Bucs are going to make another one or you're going to miss it. It's 56 yards, not 36, not 26, not even 46. 56 in the rain to give Tom Brady a chance to drive down the field and win the game. I think that no matter how many rings, no matter how many times you got to change the name on the back of your boat, 8 rings, 9 rings, 10 rings, you're not above criticism. That was a huge mistake, and they should have gone for it on 4th and 3. If they'd converted, they very well may have won the game.
Well, and that and the other one that I still, just the fact that they didn't have the right personnel and had to waste that one timeout there. You know, what was that, early 4th quarter, right? That was an odd one too, you know, altogether. So I hear you there. All right. I don't know where I want to go here. I got a few different things I could go here. There's a part of me that, you know, wants to do Davis Mills because it's low-hanging fruit. All right.
But what about David Culley? He came out and said he didn't have the team ready. You got extra days.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I'm not even going to go there because I didn't expect them to beat the Bills. And like you said, the Bills might be the best team in football. I do think it like proves that Davis Mills is not a starting quarterback in the NFL, but we'll talk about that another day. I'm going to go to Chase Young. Yeah, I am. I know they won. I'm picking two guys that won. But where's the pass rush for the Washington football team? Where is Chase Young?
You know? Well, if you graze the quarterback, you get flagged.
Well, I that was a bullcrap call. You're right about
oh boy,
that. That was one of those.
The word.
That was a horrible freaking call. There's one where you're going, what? I mean, we need to show that later in the week. That might be my grievance for tomorrow. But, again, it's a front four that's underwhelming for Washington at this point. And Chase Young he's not looked like the number two pick of the draft from 2 years ago. I'm sorry, he hasn't. So there needs to be more there from him on the edge. And you know, again, he's a physical specimen, but I'm not sure he's the most gifted pass rusher in the world. He's a little bit stiff. It's always just, let me run into the guy and see if I can push him back. And I worry about him a little that way. So I'm going to pick him, even though it's really like that whole Washington D line that needs to step their game up.
I'm thinking about Randy Bullock, but I'm going to go with the Vikings offensive line, because as that game went on, they just got overpowered. And it got to the point where they could have played another 60 minutes and the Vikings wouldn't have scored any more points. It felt fruitless. And I know at the end of the game, they got in position. We talked about Adam Thielen being held in the end zone. That was the only thing. That was the aberration. It was suffocation of the Minnesota offense after the opening drive of the game when the Vikings went right down the field and scored. And I know it's Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney and some great defensive players, but, you know, you're going to have great defensive players. And they neutralized Myles Garrett for a lot of the game. But to only score 7 points at home, inexcusable, and I blame that on the offensive line.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, that Cleveland D's got it rolling right now, but I certainly wasn't expecting that either. We've seen Minnesota kind of move the ball on everybody for the most part over the last year and a half. I mean, everybody. But I think it was a little bit, too, of one of those, like, where the coaching staffs had so much knowledge of each other, maybe that played a big factor into it. But, yeah, not good enough by their offense.
And, you know, as we're now smitten with the facial expressions of Steve Belichick, and that's going to create a platform for him that propels him to be a head coach, let's start paying attention to Joe Woods. Joe Woods, the Browns defensive coordinator, is doing some damn good things with that defense.
No doubt.
So as we start scribbling the names,
yeah,
let's start putting some cameras on Joe Woods, because I think he should be on the list for consideration.
Big rebound
as well
after that week one poor performance against the Chiefs. Yes. They were kicking butt now.
Quick break. We'll wrap up this Tuesday edition of PFT Live right after this.
No, I'm not an engineer. I have no idea. I mean, I have never heard that. I thought it was a joke, but, you know, it affected both teams. And certainly, you know, the locker room here is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. I mean, you can't see anybody. It's like a maze. So, you know, whoever contorted this visiting locker room, I'd like to meet this guy and see what his idea was.
How did that delay adversity?
It didn't have anything to do with it.
His idea was to piss you off, John. That's the idea. You're the visiting coach, right? We've heard all the stories over the year how, like, I think in Nebraska, they painted
pink,
the visiting
maybe?
Locker room pink.
Yeah.
Because they're, psychologically, that makes you not as inclined to go out and inflict violence on other people. Yes, that's one of the advantages of being the home team.
The Chargers
got to have something. They don't have the fans. They got to have something.
Seriously, no. There is some. Yeah, I think that is the reason. Or they can divide the locker room up in case there's something going there. But, yeah, they're not trying to make it accommodating for the visiting team so they feel great and could go out there and kick some butt. That's for sure.
We do agree with the concern about how in the world a domed roof stadium needs a weather delay. See you tomorrow.
See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.